This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasoline. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hoof, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstand Thursday. Now with your host, Rick Moore.
I saw stars, stars that I could reach, yeah. It was a midnight.
Have you ever been in an accident? Most of us have. It's always a difficult time, never sure exactly what's happening. Beyond the ocean beach, first things go in slow motion. Then speeding up nearly beyond comprehension, that sour feeling in your stomach, that scary feeling in your head, never certain just how bad it might turn out to be. I'm experiencing the aftermath of that right now. An accident that I caused, painful and preventable. Aren't those the worst? All just because I wasn't paying attention for a year. We should always be paying attention. Listening only to yourself accomplishes nothing. So the accident happens and you only understand how you got to this point once you look back upon it. If you'd done this or that differently. Put yourself here instead of there. Only sure of all the damage afterwards, and I'm not sure I've even reached that point yet. I've been thinking a lot about the damage because of how much it has affected my daily life. The sadness it's caused, the uncertainty, all avoidable. But there are repair shops around. Things may never be quite the same once the accident has taken place. Losing the original pieces and parts, but sometimes they can be made even better than they were before. It may just take a while at the repair shop. Of course, we're all aware that some previous repair jobs have been shoddy at best, making us less trusting and more of a disbeliever, even a cynic. But isn't there a wish that carries us through? Don't even the biggest cynics have a wish? But a wish doesn't solve the problem entirely, will it? Two people were in this accident and might be apprehensive or even dubious about getting back on the road. I may have been myopic once before, but no longer. Not about this. Not about her. It may take a while for the discomfort to dissipate, but I hope not. This was my flashpoint. My commitments are honest and meaningful, but I have to prove to others I can be a better driver, that I can listen and pay attention. I pray these others can forgive me and use this flashpoint for the things they want as well, so that we can both drive again, because I'm reaching farther than I ever have before. It's always such personal stuff with me, isn't it? 11:03 here on the wake-up call. I'll probably get into the political stuff again soon, but right now it's always me and my driving. Here we are on WNRN's The Wake-Up Call. And let me take a moment and cheer to the Harrisonburg folks on 95.1. And we are going to be talking with a local vet today. Mike Feetz. Mike, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing well. Mike is from the Georgetown Animal, I said hospital.
Georgetown Veterinary Hospital.
Georgetown Veterinary Hospital. Mm-hmm. And all I'm giving shout-outs, and we are talking about animals, my friends from the Almost Home Pet Adoption Center, the Nelson County SPCA, are over in Waynesboro. So if you're on the 88-1 line, drive down to see them. I think they're at the PetSmart in the Stewart's Draft area. I don't know the official name of that fancy shopping center that's gone up. But you can go over there. You can see them, Sandy and Sarah, doing their thing. They have some pets from the Almost Home Pet Adoption Center. And take a look. And then maybe you can dial up on your cell phone and ask Mr. Mike Feetz some questions. So let me give that number out now, 979-0919-1877-WNRN-ROCKS. We'll be here throughout the hour getting some free pet advice. Yeah, I don't know how often
monumental.
That happens. Yes. Because that doesn't happen very often, does it? A lot of schooling. Where'd you go to school?
Cornell.
Cornell?
Cornell.
Wow, sweet.
Yeah.
Almost as good as UVA.
Almost.
Obviously, you didn't quite get in here, so you took your...
I would have done UVA, they just didn't have a vet school.
You took your fallback position,
exactly,
didn't you?
Exactly.
Did you know you wanted to be a vet from the beginning?
Yeah, always a little unclear why. I didn't really grow up with any pets, but for some reason, at a very early age, I started pestering my parents with the notion that I wanted to be a vet.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that because, you know, there's fewer lawsuits than if you'd gone to medical school?
I wish that were still true. My family never really quite understood it, but I was a stubborn little kid, and the notion stuck.
Excellent. Well, yeah. I'm glad to have you here today. Mm-hmm. It's been a long time since this program, since my show, Wake Up Call, did a program with a local vet. So thank you for coming in.
I'm glad to revive it.
Yes, revive the program. What kind of pets do you have?
I have one dog and one cat. My dog is actually a 15-year-old Lhasa Apso. We celebrated his birthday 1 week ago at Rapture.
I take it that he didn't attend.
No, he did attend.
We
ate outside. Yeah, yeah. It was good. He's been with me since high school, so we're pretty tight. And then a cat who did not get to go to Rapture.
No.
She
why
stay
is that?
You know, she's just not really a crowd kind of cat.
Not a crowd kind of cat.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you've got one of each, so let me start off with one of the basic questions. Is which kind? Dogs or cats make better animals?
You're going to ask
which
make
better pets,
aren't you?
Well, no, but I think, you know, that's, and I ask that knowing that it's not the kind of question that you can, that has the line down the middle where it's right or wrong. Each one sort of fits the personal individual,
they fill their niches. You know, they each have a reason for that. I don't think I'd be happy living without one of either. They're both very different. I mean, for people in different circumstances, I mean, some people don't have the time to give a dog the attention that dogs tend to need. Cats tend to be a little bit more independent. But certainly affectionate animals. I think they get a bad rap for being aloof when a lot of them are actually very affectionate.
All right. Follow up with your question today. Again, free veterinary advice from, do you have a doctor in front of your name?
I do.
from Dr. Mike Feetz, Georgetown Veterinary Hospital. And I see the phone line ringing right away. Uh-oh. So we'll get Sean out there to answer and pass you through. Sean is producing the show today. He'll be glad to get your call and pass you along through. You know, one of the biggest questions that I've had from friends who are who own pets is, mm-hmm. do we over vaccinate?
Mm-hmm.
I got an email the other day about a pet that might need some sort of rescue from a gentleman who ran the risk of losing him.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, can you foster this animal for a while? And it included the information that this 12-year-old female dog had not had a parvo distemper. Even though she was 12,
sure.
had not had the parvo distemper in 2 years,
mm-hmm.
since 2006.
Mm-hmm.
Is that big a deal?
Well, in that case, no, only because most veterinarians are actually vaccinating on a three-year schedule with that shot now. This is something that's, you know, especially with, you know, recently in the news, concerns in human medicine about over-vaccination. It's not a non-issue in animals. I think certainly with things like rabies that are a major public health concern, there's it would be irresponsible not to vaccinate these animals. For things that are more unique concerns to just the animals and not bigger public health concerns, I mean, I'm actually kind of proud of the profession in recent years, which has moved away from annual vaccines for a lot of shots that have been shown to be just as effective given every 3 years. You know, some vets were really resistant to that move, thinking it would reduce people's incentive to come in yearly. The decrease in frequency of those shots, I think, you know, shows that we're all on the same page. I think if I saw studies in a couple of years showing that we only need to give them every 5 years, I'd happily give them every 5 years. So
mm-hmm. I mean, because a lot of people say, and Scott, hang on, I got Scott on the line, but mm-hmm. I want to finish this real quick with a question. A lot of people would say that's how vets make money.
Well, and it's an understandably cynical viewpoint. Like I said, you know, it used to be the kind of bread and butter reason why these animals would come in yearly. And one of the reasons I'm, you know, proud of recent years in the profession is, you know, things like the annual distemper vaccines have become every 3 years, and we're, you know, we're trusting people to do the right thing and come in annually and get the animal checked out. I think when called on, you know, vets do make the right decision if there's evidence to support it.
All right, let me catch through and bring on Scott. Hey, Scott, are you with me?
I am.
Mike, you can hear Scott?
I can hear Scott.
All right. Move forward, young man. Move forward with your question.
Lay it on me.
All right, I'm going to ask my question, and then I'm going to hang up and listen on the radio. We've had several animals in the past few years that have had some pain issues, uh-huh. and we feel like acupuncture has been pretty successful with them. Uh-huh. Just wondered if you wanted to comment on any experience you've had with acupuncture with any of your personal animals or
sure.
patients.
Sure. It's not something that I have any individual expertise in. I don't ever discourage people seeking those things out. But as someone who hasn't studied it or really taken part in it myself, I generally refer people to other doctors that do make that part of their practice. You know, it's probably needless to say there's a lot of debate about the benefits of such things, and a lot of the evidence in favor of it comes from anecdote. More and more of those things are starting to be studied, though, and now and then there's definitely some evidence that these things may help, and I don't discourage people from pursuing those things at all if it's helping improve the quality of their animal's life.
Mike Feetz from the Georgetown Veterinary Hospital here. In the studio today on the Wake Up Call, 979-0919, 1-877 WNRN Rocks. Dial us up and give Dr. Feetz a chance to answer your call, your vet pet questions, all for free here during the hour. Scott asked you that question about acupuncture. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Are you aware of local folks? And because you mentioned that it's anecdotal, that's really no different than... Mm-hmm. You know, human acupuncture.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things. I mean, obviously, acupuncture, it dates back, I don't even know how far. You'd have to ask someone that's more aware of these things than I am. But certainly precedes, you know, modern Western medicine by a pretty good deal. You know, I think from the scientific end, you know, the evidence that it works often gets distracted from by the kind of mechanism by which it might work. And I think there's a lot of interest right now in figuring out if it does work, then why. I think medical professionals in general are scientific by nature and always want to know why things are working. You know, notions of energy channels and so on seem a little bit unusual and probably not likely to be the mechanism if these things help. I think any doctor of any sort, really, veterinary or otherwise, is always happy to have a new tool in the toolbox. And if something's proven to work, then far be it from me to say don't use it.
All right, we got Sarah from Lovingston. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Richard. I had a question for Dr. Feetz, please.
Okay.
Dr. Feetz has treated one of my animals before. I think he's wonderful. So I'm going to take advantage of this freeness of the phone call. I have a really, really old antique Malamute who is probably 2 years beyond his life expectancy, mm-hmm. and he's got arthritis. Yep. Back leg. Yep. And I wonder if it's okay to give him aspirin. He has been treated with Rimadyl in the past, mm-hmm. which gave him the trots. So I was wondering if I could maybe just give him aspirin and try to avoid that mess.
Sure.
And I'll hang up and listen.
Yeah, sure. You know, aspirin and Rimadyl are all part of the same class of drug, and they work by by similar mechanisms, and the newer generations of these drugs have been designed to hopefully, you know, maximize the improvement in symptoms, minimize the side effects, and allow lower doses. Aspirin does work in dogs, and it can safely be used in dogs. I'm always a little careful with this conversation because there are other NSAIDs that cannot be used that way. Drugs like Aleve can actually be toxic to dogs, and in cats, most of these drugs are actually terribly toxic. But aspirin in particular actually can be used safely in dogs. Frequently, it'll be recommended to use Ascriptin, which helps protect the stomach a little bit. It is aspirin, but it's got a protectant in it. The only problem with aspirin is that the doses typically needed to achieve the same pain relief in dogs that you'd get with a similar dose of Rimadyl are just spectacularly high. And at that dose, a lot of times you do end up incurring the side effects that are associated with it. But it is an appropriate drug. If you've had trouble with Rimadyl, you may have just as much trouble with aspirin, however.
And, you know, you talk about aspirin versus mm-hmm. Aleve.
Mm-hmm.
Are we, you know, and I don't know my... You know, my descriptions here, and without knocking, you know, I hope that folks who are listening and who might be concerned and willing to bring on a lawsuit understand that. But aspirin and Aleve and Tylenol and Excedrin mm-hmm. are the last three all into the please no could be toxic category, while the aspirin such as Bayer. Which is my understanding of aspirin, and that may
sure.
be, you know, old style, old school.
I generally just recommend, you know, any time you're considering doing something like that, it's just best to call your veterinarian. NSAIDs, that class of drug are the non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, and they're abbreviated NSAIDs. They're an unusually fickle drug. What works well in one animal can be toxic in another. Rimadyl in particular was initially in development for use in humans and was an absolute disaster, but it turned out it worked well in dogs. There are so many of those drugs, and every year companies are pushing more to market because they've been just insanely successful in controlling arthritis in these older dogs. But the sheer number of them is boggling, and we're so used to using them as over-the-counter medications and kind of erroneously assuming their safety because of that. But they can be very dangerous in certain circumstances. I just, you know, whoever your vet is, you know, best to call them and just double-check before giving your dog really anything, whether it's an NSAID or otherwise.
Speaking of vets, we are talking with veterinary individual Mike Feetz in the studio today from Georgetown Veterinary Hospital. Dial us up. Get your free vet information, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN rocks. The last caller made mention of after effects. And I'm curious, you know, I think the word she used was trots.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen a dog. You know, I guess scooting along the grass. We'll use
sure.
the word scooting along on
it's
the grass.
One of our charming behaviors.
Right. You know, what is that all about?
Typically, it means that this is going to get gross for people who are currently eating brunch. But dogs actually have glands on the right at the entrance to the anus that build up fluid. It's the same glands that skunks use to spray you, used for a different purpose. But they can get clogged up, and then they itch and they hurt, and dogs will generally let you know by scooting. And that's usually very easily fixed. You bring them in, you get them emptied, and everything's fine. But in other cases, sometimes you'll see that because of allergies. Sometimes you'll see that because a dog has parasites. It can vary.
All right. I think you've answered that question fully for me, and probably more so for others.
Perhaps you'll choose your questions more carefully.
Well, you know, sometimes, that's my role here is, you know, I'm not here to take a side, usually. I'm just trying to learn more, and hopefully for somebody who can't dial in, although you're welcome to, 979-0919, you know, I just want to ask the question for those who are like, huh, yeah, you know, I have seen that before. Well, what is that all about? Here's one, because I did mention, I did give the shout out to the women from the Almost Home Pet Adoption Center, doing their thing
sure.
at PetSmart in the Stewart's Draft Waynesboro area.
Mm-hmm.
Your topic, your thoughts mm-hmm. on argument about adopting from a shelter versus mm-hmm. the backyard, you know, the backyard breeder kind
backyard
of thing.
This is tough. I mean, it's an ethically complicated issue. I mean, certainly animals in shelters are, you know, they're there, they're homeless, they're deserving of homes. And there is this general tendency to say, you know, we don't want to support, you know, backyard breeding, irresponsible breeding. As a general rule, you know, as with many things, I mean, the best way to kind of discourage those people from doing that is to make it no longer profitable for them. Certainly not adopting those animals makes sense in that regard. That said, I mean, you can imagine it rationalized the opposite way. I mean, these backyard breeders are doing their thing regardless, and then these poor animals have no homes either. In general, if someone's adopting a dog, I mean, there's an element of nobility to that regardless. The exact source of them becomes a little bit less important, but I do encourage people to look in shelters first.
All right, speaking of which, the www.nelsonspca.org is for the almost home folks, which have good friends I'm good friends with. I see Scott is on the phone. Scott, give me just a moment to do my business here, that it's 11:20 on the wake-up call with Dr. Mike Feetz, Georgetown Veterinary Hospital.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
Oh, let's give out the weather for the day. Markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Cloudy with showers this morning, then becoming mostly sunny today. Highs 80 to 85 with a 20% chance of showers in the afternoon and early evening. Mostly clear tonight, lows 65 to 70. Sunny tomorrow, highs 80 to 85 for Labor Day. Right now in the valley, some clouds in 71, 78 in Lynchburg, 77 in Richmond, and a beautiful 72 in Charlottesville. Let me thank the folks at Bob Wade Auto World. You can find them in Harrisonburg, featuring the all-new 2009 Forester and the Bob Wade Subaru Loaner Car for Life program. Something for everyone at Bob Wade Subaru on the Route 11 Motor Mile in Harrisonburg. For more information, it's bobwadeautoworld.com. Whole Foods Market in Charlottesville is supporting community organizations in the area with its 5% days. Coming up, Whole Foods will donate 5% of the day's sales to the area's only community radio station, WNRN. Whole Foods supporting keeping WNRN's unique programming on the air and helps publicize other organizations' 5% days throughout the year. That's the Whole Foods Market 5% day for WNRN at Whole Foods Market, 29 North here in Charlottesville. And it's not just the businesses, it's also the folks we need to thank, such as Brenda Clement-Jones, Molly and Jim Kroll, and Suzanne Brock, for contributing to WNRN's fund drive this past spring. It's because of folks like them that you have the wake-up call on the air. So stay tuned and tell a friend about WNRN's wake-up call and other programming you enjoy on 91.9. Be sure to support us during the upcoming fall fund drive. All right, now I think I'm worn out from that. So let's let Dr. Feetz take over again and Scott's call. All right, Scott.
Just a brief follow-up on the acupuncture. I completely understand the limitations of case reports and so forth, but I was impressed that our several dogs actually fell asleep during acupuncture, so it clearly was doing something for them, relaxing. But this is more just an open-ended question.
Sure.
We've, over the course of three dogs in the past 5 to 6 years, we average about $1,200 to $1,500 a year in vet bills. And it seems like, you know, that's excluding even things that are marginal like acupuncture. It feels like dog ownership is getting to be really a luxury because of the vet bills. And I would hasten to add that I have at no point feel like our vets are trying to sort of churn the market or try to get us into things that we don't need to do.
Sure.
But do you have any thoughts on sort of cost containment?
Yeah, this is a really hard issue, and veterinarians are actually really conscious of this all the time. You know, one of the differences between you know, what people deal with in human medicine versus veterinary medicine is, you know, with humans, I mean, a lot of things get absorbed by insurance. For veterinary medicine, I mean, every time I recommend a test, every time I recommend a treatment, I'm well aware this comes from owners' pockets. You know, what's changed most, and most of the reason these costs have gone up, is really the generally perceived standard of care for pets in the country, and the fact that, you know, whereas the sentence used to be, you know, my dog is like family, I think increasingly that sentence is my dog is family. And, you know, I don't feel that's something, you know, veterinarians have created. I think that's just the shift the country's gone in. And it does make things difficult for people sometimes. And I think that's one of the reasons it's really important to make sure you have a veterinarian that you trust. You know, I need people to trust me so that when I do recommend something that's going to be expensive, they know that I'm doing it for valid reasons and not to line my own pockets. If there's any misconception, no one becomes a veterinarian to get rich. I definitely understand it's difficult for people. I think Rick had expressed some interest in even brushing on the topic of pet insurance, which kind of ties neatly into this, I think.
Fire it up.
You know, I have a very small number of clients that actually use pet insurance. I think last statistics I saw, I think it's somewhere around 3% of people actually keep some kind of official insurance for their pets. I've seen a lot of surveys. I know some people really wind up being happy with their pet insurance, particularly if something catastrophic happens. You know, you have an otherwise healthy, you know, 3-year-old retriever that's trotting in the yard and managed to rupture his cruciate ligament. It's nice to have it on hand for things like that. Surveys I've seen mostly indicate, and this is not to say it's good or bad, that most people over the life of their pet with pet insurance will end up spending more on pet insurance than they would on the care of the animal to begin with. That's not to say the insurance is a bad idea. I mean, this is just kind of par for the course for insurance in general. I mean, you know, you pay for auto insurance every year, and most years you don't really have to use it. And it's there as a backup. What's often been recommended, and I think the only problem with this is it requires a fairly heavy degree of discipline, is, you know, taking what you would think you'd be spending on pet insurance to begin with and, you know, setting aside some kind of savings account. And, you know, I'm well aware that in an economy like this one, people are busy trying to pay their mortgages and putting away money in case Bingo gets an ear infection is a little hard to swallow. You know, veterinarians are really conscious of the cost issues and try really hard to keep it under control. I think in most cases, you know, after discussion with clients, I think we do spend a lot of time trying to find the most monetarily efficient route from A to B in order to get there.
I will toss this in, yeah. Not as only as some snarky comment, that I find that to be true, because mm-hmm. when you go into many, or I'll say several mm-hmm. area doctor's offices, and certainly any hospital, mm-hmm. Why are they so beautifully decorated? And while I go into Georgetown Veterinary Hospital, uh-huh. while I believe that everything there is needed and necessary, uh-huh. I don't see the beautiful chandelier
sure.
hanging from
sure.
the ceiling.
Yeah, I mean, you want to keep it presentable, but there's certainly an air of pragmatism around veterinary medicine, and there always has been. And those concerns come from a lot of ends. I mean, some people don't have the money to spend on certain things. Other people, you know, honestly don't believe it's the right thing for the animal in certain cases. And those things all need to be taken into account. It becomes a very case-to-case sort of thing.
All right. 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. That's the toll-free number, 1-877-WNRN. Maybe you're over where the ladies are in Stewart's Draft at that PetSmart checking out the animals. We have Dr. Mike Feetz here from Georgetown Veterinary Hospital. Why do cats throw up so often?
To annoy us. I for a lot of reasons. I mean, cats, unlike dogs, they groom themselves all the time. They're constantly swallowing their own hair. Even if hairballs aren't coming up, a good portion of vomiting cats are doing so because of hair that they're eating. That's the succinct answer. I generally, you know, if your cat seems to be vomiting unusually much, I wouldn't take it for granted that there isn't a problem underlying things.
It just seems to always be right at the doorstep.
Yeah, it is frequently at the doorstep.
You know, just outside of the bowl.
Mine is usually under wherever my foot happens to be landing next.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. and to follow on that train of thought, why do dogs always seem to be rolling around in smelly, nasty places? I have a friend who's, when they lived further up Route 20,
yeah.
who's, you could always tell when he'd snuck under the fence to the neighbor's property, because he always came back smelling like cow pee, because he would literally go get near the cows and then the cows would pee on him.
I love questions like this. And I should petition the vet schools in the country to have a class on trivia that you're guaranteed to be asked, but for which there may not be answers. Any vet that gives you a definitive answer to this question is lying through his teeth. I have no idea why dogs roll in those things. I assume they like the smell, and I really don't know. It's along with the scooting across the yard, one of their charming behaviors that.
Got it. All right, I'll let you off the hook with that. 11:29 on the wake up call. Feel free to dial us up and ask your question for some free vet advice. 979-0919 1-877 WNRN Rocks. Let me thank Rita's Italian Ice for their support today. They feature Italian ice and custard made fresh daily with real fruit every day. Brings a new selection of flavors at Rita's. Rita's Italian Ice can be found 1509 University Avenue near the UVA grounds. That's Rita's Italian Ice in Charlottesville, 244-7482. Sounds like a good thing to hit right after the wake-up call is over, and you're listening to Les Temps Perdue. Dangerous, because I was out at my girlfriend's place a month or so ago, and we happened to be walking towards one of the barns on the property and saw a copperhead snake. Mm-hmm. Now, the copperhead was not in any dangerous position, but the dogs pretty much run free there.
Yeah.
What happens if the dog gets bitten by a copperhead snake?
Snake bites are common. Depending on the types of snakes that bite, there could be very varying degrees of tissue damage. This is unfortunately one of those things in veterinary medicine that commonly is treated kind of to the best of our ability. There are anti-venoms, and there are even some vaccines now that are intended to counter certain types of snake bites in advance. Frequently, it's sort of treated on an as-needed basis. You generally just protect the animal as best as you can. In most cases, the identity of the snake is unknown, and the specific antitoxin you'd need to use in order to counter it is also unknown. And unfortunately, those things can actually be very dangerous. And unless you really know you need to use them, can be problematic. But snake bites are one of those things that are always unfortunate when they come in, because there's not a lot of clear answers with them for people when they come in.
All right. We got a call. Ginger in Waynesboro. Hey, Ginger.
Hi. How are you?
I'm well. Ask your question to Dr. Feetz.
Okay. I'm just curious. My dog, I have two labs, and they are often eating grass, lots of grass.
Uh-huh.
And oftentimes it's not pleasant on the other end. So I'm just curious as to why dogs do that.
Grass eating is one of those behaviors in dogs that has frequently been associated with stomach upset. Whether or not it's causing it or is the result of it is unclear in most cases. My suspicion in most cases is that it's causing it and not the reflection of it. I did read a small study recently where they attempted to compare the grass-eating habits of healthy dogs with dogs that had things like parasites and so on. And their conclusion was that all these dogs have the same tendency to eat grass, which again kind of just leaves you with the dog wanting a salad. But I do generally discourage it. While it's not abnormal behavior, my concern is always the grass. It's a dog that's willing to eat grass is also going to be willing to eat, you know, a mushroom growing in the corner of the yard or other things that are potentially toxic. So trying to limit that behavior is always beneficial.
Okay. Well, thank you. Well, I'm at the dog walking park, and my dogs are about to go crazy in the car. Thank you very much.
Have fun at the park.
Okay. Bye.
All right, that puts the phone line back open, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCK. Sean's here to answer your questions. I see the phone line, the not a toll-free number, is ringing up. Use the toll-free line if you want. Dr. Feetz,
yeah.
Ginger was asking about eating grass. Without assuming that you have no personal financial reasons to say so, what should we be feeding dogs and cats?
Well, this is a common answer, and people will agonize over this decision. You go to the pet food store, and I can't even count the number of foods there are at this point. I generally tell people, unless a dog has a specific medical problem that justifies a very specific diet, there are very few diets on the market, commercial diets, that are going to be bad for your pet. You'll hear a lot of, you know, people harping on, you know, fillers in this, and this one's higher protein, this one's lower protein, and this and that. And in the vast majority of cases, it doesn't much matter. Most pets in this country if they're eating any of these the popular diets, most pets in this country are probably eating better than their owners are, and it's really tough to argue with any of them.
All right, I see that Scott's really into this today.
Scott,
what you got?
Hey, I shouldn't be doing this. I'm driving along. I actually work at a poison control center, so I did want to clarify a couple of things. In this area, there are only two, in Virginia, there are only two essentially poisonous snakes. They both actually use the same antivenin.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Crofab, and it has lower toxicity than the old stuff.
Yep.
There's no problem with using it if you don't have an envenomation. It's fairly expensive, but...
Yep.
What we at the Poison Center don't want people to do is spend any time trying to identify what the offending snake was, since the antivenin is the same, and really you base your decision to use it on symptoms, not the identity of the snake.
Yeah, and that's,
I did want to add those comments in again, because I'm driving, I'm going to jump again.
No, I appreciate that.
So I'm assuming that what he's saying is, don't waste valuable time trying to find the snake.
Try to track down the snake.
Just get into whether it's for you or your dog or any other pet that you may have.
Sure.
Just get in there to start the process.
Yeah. The decision to use antivenin is it's a difficult one for owners. It is very expensive. I mean hundreds and hundreds of dollars. Since most of these cases do resolve fairly normally without too much trouble. It's fairly rarely used, but there certainly are tragic cases, and I don't mean to belittle those cases at all.
979-0919, Dr. Mike Feetz here, one of the area vets. He's from Georgetown Veterinary Hospital. Dial up, take advantage of the free vet advice. 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN rocks. If you're a little further out in the area, you're talking about food for the pets.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard that there are a lot of chew treats that aren't particularly good for my dog because they are made of bad things and not necessarily toxic things.
Sure.
It's just stuff that's not good for them.
Sure. I get a lot of questions about rawhides and that sort of thing. And I generally recommend, in most cases with these sorts of things, I usually recommend people try to be there when their dogs are playing with these things. There's always the off chance that... Any chew toy that's designed to be gradually whittled down in size can become a choking hazard later on. None of them are particularly bad for your dog if used, responsibly in the way they're meant to be used. Some dogs will just have peculiar trouble with things. I've seen some dogs that just tend to swallow their rawhides whole, and as a result are not ideal for them because they end up with stomach aches for the next 2 weeks.
All right. Let's see. We got John from Louisa. Hey, John.
Hey, how are you guys today?
We're doing good.
I have a question for you. I may have missed it. You may have already answered it. But what does it usually mean when a dog sits on his rear and then slides it across the yard?
This is a popular topic. I think it's going to be this and snake bites are going to be the two topics of the morning. Typically those dogs, in almost all circumstances, it means their rear end itches. And the most common reason for that is that they need to have the anal glands emptied out.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'd had a dog some years ago when he did it. Occasionally, sometimes it was a result of having tapeworm.
Yeah, and that's the
worm. I didn't know if that was the main reason for that or not.
It tends to be the less common reason, but it is absolutely on the list of things that cause that, and then allergies pretty much rounds out the group.
All right.
Yep.
All right, John. Thanks, man.
You're welcome.
Bye.
All right. See, we got a call coming through on the other line, or a question anyway. But 979-0919 is open. Dial it up. Can you recommend a good vet for more farm-like animals? A good goat vet.
I don't know any goat vets.
Where do you hang out in this county?
I know. No, our hospital does small animal, I'll be honest. I cannot answer that question.
When you say small animals, does that include rabbits?
Not at our hospital.
Birds?
We do dogs and cats. The more exotic pets, not so much.
All right. 11:38 here on a Sunday morning wake-up call with Dr. Mike Feats. Call up with your free vet questions.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
Oh, John Castine has been president of UVA for 18 years, longer at his position than any peer at another top 50 college. What is his secret for success? This week, Ma's Restaurant gets a review from The Hook. And what would be your excuse to the police if found inside a business after hours with a theft alarm ringing? Well, maybe she was in the wrong place. The Hook, not just lunch, dinner, and late night, but 24/7. Oh, let's take a moment and thank Blue Ridge Mountain Sports for their support. Blue Ridge has gear for the coming season, including fleece and rain shells for men, women, and kids. You'll also find shoes for city, campus, or mountain trails. Blue Ridge Mountain Sports is in the Barracks Road Shopping Center here in Charlottesville. They're at Wintergreen and in the Chesterfield Town Center at Richmond. Plus, online, brms.com. There's also some UVA intramural and recreational sports information that you need. You can sign up online now this year. Registration for outdoor soccer and football is going on through September 2nd. Once you've registered online, you still need to come down to the Aquatic and Fitness Center business office to pay, which is necessary to complete the registration process. Member sign up for other programs will be this Tuesday from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. at the Aquatic and Fitness Center, with open registration beginning Wednesday. More is at virginia.edu/IMS or call the NRN studio line. And since he just walked in the studio, let me remind you, Les Timms-Perdue up next with Drew Thompson. If French isn't your thing here around the studio, that means the time's gone by. And on WNRN, that's 80s and 90s alternative. Tune in for it at noon. Les Timms-Perdue, brought to you in part by Plan 9 Music, only on WNRN. All right, now we got the phone lines going. Is this Heather on line two? All right, let me punch all the right buttons. And Heather, welcome. Join in.
Hi. My question is, my dog seems to be allergic to fleas.
Mm-hmm.
When they bite her, she then breaks out and bumps and sometimes even hives and then gets the hot spots.
Mm-hmm.
So we have her on Revolution, but I'm trying to figure out how do I even prevent the fleas from biting her.
Yeah, this is tough. There's so many flea products on the market now. I typically, and I don't intend to be advertising different products here. I typically, for dogs that are having active problems with fleas, I've had better luck with things like Advantage or Frontline. And the main reason is Revolution, although you're putting it on the skin, but it actually is absorbed and is delivered via the bloodstream. It doesn't affect the fleas until they bite. Whereas things like Advantage and Frontline are entirely topical, and the fleas don't need to bite first before dying. So you might have better luck with one of those instead.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Heather. Now, there was an anonymous call around the same time that said best treatment for fleas.
Uh-huh.
And that's really what we just answered.
Yes, in fact, it is.
Okay.
That might have been Scott. he's too shy to use his name now.
on the toll-free line, we got George from Midlothian. Hey, George.
Hey, how are you?
Thanks for hanging on there.
I got a question on dogs, the cold nose, warm nose. The cold nose is healthy. The warm nose means they're not feeling well. My dog fairly routinely has a warm nose but doesn't appear to have any problem.
Yeah, this is one of those things. I mean, certainly if a dog has a really spectacular fever, I mean, their nose will get warm. And I mean, you can glean some information of it, but in the 5 years I've been practicing, I've never diagnosed a dog with anything based on the hotness, coldness, wetness, dryness of its nose.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Thanks, man.
Okay.
And the phone calls are coming in. Hey, quick question before we get to the next caller. You know, because you're talking about the cold nose, warm
yep.
nose, my dog shakes his head a lot. In fact, when I bring him into the studio with me on some Sundays, I have to take his collar off so that people don't hear this jingly sound in the background of the program. What's that all about? I mean, he is a hound dog. Long-eared.
Yeah, I mean, he may just be disagreeing with you, but
more
likely, especially with a hound with long ears. I mean, they do frequently get ear infections, and certainly be checked for that. Some dogs do just have itchy ears. I mean, if he doesn't have an ear infection, then I wouldn't worry too much about it. Some dogs are doing it as a result of allergies. If they have them, sometimes it makes their ears itch. The main thing to watch, I have seen some dogs really injure their ears fairly badly just from the sheer act of shaking their head around. So yeah. if it seems more frequent than you're comfortable with, probably best to get it checked out.
All right. Yep. Let's see. We have Molly. Is this my friend Molly?
Yes, it is.
Hi, Molly. How are you?
I'm doing well.
I hope you're having a great Sunday.
Thank you.
Question for a free vet advice from Dr. Mike Feetz.
Yes, I do. I have fostered two litters of orphan kittens this summer.
Uh-huh.
One litter I got when they were 2 weeks old, the other litter when they were 4 weeks old. And in each litter, I've had one kitten suffer from severe diarrhea,
mm-hmm.
become semi-comatose. I found them, you know, almost unconscious,
mm-hmm.
and had to rush them to the emergency vet.
Okay.
Am I doing something wrong?
It's hard to know. Most likely no, if the other cats are doing fine. It's hard to know without, you know, more detail on what the cat looked like when it was seen. I mean, there certainly are some, I mean various infections and things that can cause terrible diarrhea in young cats. And unfortunately, you know, young animals are particularly vulnerable to these sorts of things. The distemper virus in cats can cause terrible diarrhea. I mean, even simple parasites in a really young kitten can be a major problem. They dehydrate very quickly, particularly if they stop eating, a lot of them just can't survive very long without very aggressive support. I wouldn't necessarily say it's something you're doing wrong unless the problem can be identified and then addressed.
You're talking one kitten out of four,
one
right?
One litter, there were four kittens, and the other litter, there were three.
One in each?
The second litter, it was definitely the little runt.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know,
I'm afraid to take on any more for fear.
And then a lot of people worry that they've, you know, if it's an infectious thing, is it already just kind of, you know, put itself into your environment, mm-hmm. or are the other cats going to get it? And you know, without knowing more specifically what it is, it's so difficult to know. And
well,
I can
show you where Molly lives if you'd like, Mike, and take you out there.
We'll head out after the show.
Have survived and they're doing well.
Yeah, I mean that tends to imply you're doing more right than wrong, You know, if there is something infectious around, this is always difficult. You know, you have to kind of weigh the good you're doing in trying to take care of these kittens, you know, versus the you know, likely vague possibility that there's something in your house that's causing these kittens to die. We do frequently see in litters that there'll be, I mean, especially as the litters get bigger and bigger, that there'll be one or two that just don't thrive.
Mm-hmm.
It'll sound silly, but the diagnosis is frequently failure to thrive. Which is more of a restatement of the problem than a legitimate, you know, answer to the question. It sounds like you're, you know, trying to do the right thing. Unless it can be established why these kittens are dying, it's very difficult to say.
And Molly, just to toss out the good point so you don't focus on the bad, is fostering the kittens is already the good thing.
Yeah, exactly.
And I found homes for practically all of them.
Yeah, and it sounds like you're doing, probably entirely good. Certainly.
So to keep doing it.
Yeah, I would say keep doing it. The cats need you.
All right. Thanks, Molly.
Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Bye. All right, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN Rocks. And by the way, as we talk about fostering kittens, I'll keep throwing out my plugs for the Almost Home Pet Adoption Center down in Nelson County. There is absolutely nothing but great things to say about the Albemarle, Charlottesville Albemarle SPCA. But that place is rocking in funds, and they're on the north side of the county.
Mm-hmm.
If you live on the south side of the county, please consider the Nelson County SPCA, because they need donations, they need volunteers, they need people to donate their time and their homes to foster dogs and cats. All right, we got Andrew from Charlottesville. Hey, Andrew.
Hey, how are you?
Doing well.
I have a question. I have a very small, approximately 6 years old, blind dog, mm-hmm. who has cataracts.
Mm-hmm.
I adopted him blind.
Mm-hmm.
And when I first got him, I spoke to the vet, and she mentioned something about that there is surgery available, but it seemed prohibitively expensive,
okay.
And I was wondering if the doctor had any advice on if there are vets locally that do that, and roughly if he knew how much it costs, and if it was a good route to go.
Sure. Yeah, I don't know of anyone locally that does it. I mean, depending on how we're defining local, there's a great veterinary ophthalmologist, Dr. Blair, working down in Richmond, who I send eye cases to frequently. Yeah, unfortunately, cataracts are one of those things where surgery is the only option. You know, there's no medication that makes cataracts go away. The lens has been completely blocked, and removing the lens is the only way to take care of it. I don't know, to be honest, what it costs. I've only had, I think, two people ever elect to bring their animals down there to have it done. Both of them were thrilled with the results afterwards. One owner was crying when she realized that her dog was tracking her with his eyes again, and just you know, to make the blind see is. You know, you could certainly give a call down there and get an estimate and see what it costs. There are some additional diagnostics to do in advance to make sure the retina behind the lens is still working. If it's not, then removing the cataract isn't going to do anything to restore vision. Mm-hmm. But if that retina is working, then the dog may very well be able to see again.
Okay.
Yep.
Good luck.
Great, thanks for the info.
Good luck, Andrew, because Lazarus is blind in one eye.
Oh, sweet. Well, good luck with that.
All right, man. Bye.
Take care. Thanks a lot.
979-0919. Only about 10 minutes left with Dr. Mike Feetz from the Georgetown Veterinary Hospital. Dial up, take advantage of the free pet advice, and it's obvious from the number of calls, you're going to have to come back on.
Take your show.
Oh, well. I saved these for the end of the program because I didn't want the conversation to be all about this topic.
Sure.
It's just going to get the phone line ringing about this and never change anything.
Yeah.
I'm going to toss this one out first, and then I want to get to the other one. Concerns about putting your pet down when it just becomes too painful for the pet.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious about how you handle that and things that the pet owner should look for.
Sure. You know, it's certainly one of the darkest parts of what I do. Frequently, you know, if people discuss their prior aspirations to become a vet, you know, the frequent thing that turns them off is the fact that they'll have to do this. I generally tell people, I mean, they know their animals better than I do. And I think, you know, people who are good owners are really very in touch with their pets, and have a good sense of whether that animal is happy or not. And even going beyond pain, I mean, there are plenty of illnesses as dogs get older that don't make them painful, but do very decidedly diminish their quality of life. It's such an individual decision, and I try and support people regardless of how they decide to proceed with these things. It is fairly rare that I'll see a case where I think it's medically necessary to euthanize an animal, and it usually falls much more to the owner's impression of that dog's quality of life. I know that sounds a little bit like a dodge, but in those circumstances, I feel like my job becomes much, much more counselor than it is veterinarian.
All right, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN Rocks. We do have a little bit of time left with Dr. Mike Feetz, the veterinarian in the Charlottesville area. The other thing that I wanted to talk about were pit bulls.
Mm-hmm.
They have this incredibly horrid reputation.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I have discovered over the past year and a half, and this image of mine, along with most of society's, has been broken.
Yep.
Because I found that there are so many animals that it seems to me that it's what I've learned is it's not the animal, it's the owner.
Yeah, and you know, not to pin everything on the owner. So some dogs, even with the best training and upbringing, will still have behavioral problems. But as a general rule, I mean, I see pit bulls so frequently. I mean, if you go down to the local animal shelters, I mean, half the cages are full of pit bulls and pit bull mixes. They're an overrepresented breed, and it's troublesome because every time an attack happens, and it's not to marginalize the tragedy in the lives of people that this has affected, but they are terribly uncommon. I mean, these things reach the front page of the national news for the same reason that airplane accidents do. It's just because they're not common. If they were common, we wouldn't hear about them all the time. It's unfortunate. I mean, some of the sweetest dogs I've ever known are pit bulls. You go down to the SPCA and there's just so many of them. In recent years, there's been a lot of, you know, so-called dangerous dog legislation, either at the government level or sometimes just at the property managing level. Just a couple weeks ago, I had a very nice couple with two very nice dogs who were forced to give their dogs up to different owners because the property manager decided that they too closely resembled pit bulls and are no longer allowed to live on the property. And I don't know, it's hard to justify that kind of nonsensical behavior for no reason whatsoever.
Hey, do animals fear death?
I mean,
whether you're putting them to sleep
in the,
and I guess that's really when it,
I think like any animal, there's the desire to survive. I think we're all rigged with the mechanism to avoid death when it seems.
But you
evident.
Talk about your,
but they're not,
and your dog can tell when you're upset.
Sure.
You know, and not being a cat owner,
sure.
I can't tell that. But your dog can tell when you're upset.
Sure.
And so would it be able to tell of this change in its life coming?
It's a good question. I don't know how far they intellectualize it, nor do I really feel it's my domain to take a guess. I mean, you certainly see news stories about dogs that seem to be able to, you know, there was a cat in the news, I think, last week that had a pretty good track record of sitting by patients right before they died. You know, what they're capable of sensing and what the reasons behind it are, I don't really know. I've certainly had people interpret their dog's behavior at the end of their life as, you know, he knows he's ready. Again, I think people are in touch enough with their own animals that those interpretations are certainly as valid as any interpretation I could give.
All right, 11:55 for the wake up call. Chris, hang on just a second. I got a little business to do. I need to thank 45fix.com for their support of the program. If you have a home improvement project, there's another way to find a contractor. It's 45fix.com. From remodeling to repair projects, immediate, no obligation estimates are available anytime. That's 45fix.com, the number 4, the number 5, and the word fix.com. Remember, you are listening to WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetbriar, Amherst, Lynchburg. And if you're a pet lover, and you're looking for maybe another pet, head over to the Stewart's Draft area and the Pet Smart over there. All right, we got Chris. Hey, Chris.
Hi. I've got a real problem with a barking dog above me. I've been trying to get the owner to use a muzzle. Is there any objection to using a muzzle, is it effective?
No, it's not. Muzzles, you know, there's two basic types of muzzles. The only kind that's going to stop them from barking is one that you really can't leave on long term. The problem with leaving muzzles on dogs, to stop them from barking, you need to restrict their mouth from opening. Unfortunately, a dog's mouth is about the only means it has of dissipating heat. It's a good way of killing a dog to leave a muzzle on it all the time. There are basket muzzles, but that's not going to stop them from barking. This is a really difficult issue. They make, you know, sound sensitive bark collars that work either by shock or by puffing.
Yeah, they don't work.
No, they don't always work. Sometimes they frighten the dog more. And then there's the alternate kind that'll put a puff of citronella in the air, and those, you know, work intermittently as well. These are really difficult situations. And especially when it's not your dog and it's kind of out of your hands. I wish there were really good advice. Recently, and this was pretty well publicized, there's recent anti-barking legislation in certain places in Virginia. I'm not sure if it's statewide or if it's on a local level.
Well, we did one here recently, I think in Albemarle.
Yeah, did we? The pros and benefits of this are a little tough to know. I can certainly sympathize with your position. I just wish I had better advice for you.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, 11:57 on the wake-up call. We might have time for your question, or maybe even two, if it's a quick, easy answer. 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS is the toll-free number if maybe you're calling from Midlothian, like a caller we had earlier. How do you teach a dog to only go to the bathroom outside? I mean, are there some simple ways, or maybe to even extend the length of time before you can get home? You know, if your work job changes, and so
sure.
Now instead of just being gone 8 hours, now you need to be gone 10 hours.
Sure, sure. Yeah, and a lot of dogs are really good at holding it in, much better than most people, I can imagine. You know, typically, if the dog is having accidents, crate training is generally the best recommendation.
And that's because they don't want to go in their area.
Yeah, I think a lot of people misunderstand crate training as punishing the dog by putting it in its crate if it has an accident, but it's actually the opposite of that. The crate is a preventative measure to keep the dog from urinating in the house. Like most aspects of dog training, especially in recent years, the emphasis is put more on the positive reinforcement of the good behavior than the negative reinforcement of the bad. But it can be a slow, grueling process for some dogs.
All right, I see we got a call on line four. It might be our last call of the day, but I'll eat up a few words just to take advantage of Sean passing that through. Emergency information, because this area does have an emergency number to dial, right?
I don't know it off the top of my head, but I know at our hospital, if you call after hours, the answering machine will give you their number. So there's always a way to get it. It's actually really nicely set up in this town where the emergency service opens pretty much during the off hours of all the local hospitals, and then we kind of flip flop.
All right. It looks like we're going to run out of time before we can get this last call on the air. Sean, if you put him on hold, maybe we can talk Dr. Feetz into staying in the studio and answering this call. Dr. Mike Feetz, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
For coming into the studio today. I think as long as you were comfortable and you were happy, you have now become an official regular visit.
Uh-oh.
To the Sunday morning wake-up call.
This could become a new career for me, huh?
Well, yes, because it's a volunteer thing and we don't pay.
That's easy for you.
That's right.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much. You're welcome to send questions to me, abstractme@AOL.com. I'll do my best to pass them along to Dr. Feetz. No, let's not take advantage of that and send 300 out, but he might have one or two. If you're listening to the podcast of this, www.cvillepodcast.com, and we'll see what we can do. Thank you so much. Next weekend, we're back to the politics, covering the after effects of both national conventions. Adios.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. And by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon Gasoline, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@AOL.com or at WNRN.org. The wake-up call is produced by Michael Strickland. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for the wake-up call, only on WNRN.